Israeli settlers performed religious rituals at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds, in a move that was banned decades ago. No casualties as rockets target an area near the highly sensitive green zone in Baghdad. No information on who is behind the attack yet. China hitting out at a U.S. intelligence report on the origins of the coronavirus, calling it both political and false. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The situation has been tense in the occupied Al-Quds in the past few hours after a group of Israeli settlers, escorted by armed soldiers, entered the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Local sources telling us that dozens of settlers have performed Jewish rituals at the mosque. Our correspondent Ramallah Mona Kendall explains why the Palestinians regard these visits provocative and if Israelis are allowed to conduct prayers inside the mosque, silently or otherwise.
What happened this morning is that dozens of Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, protected by Israeli police officers. They toured the area there, and then, according to local sources, they performed their Jewish rituals there. It's forbidden for Israeli settlers to perform any of their prayers or any kind of prayers, even the so-called silent prayers, inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. And this has angered the Palestinians. Last month, there was a ruling by an Israeli court that allows the Israeli settlers to perform their silent prayers. However, after rejection and condemnation, anger reactions from the Islamic world, the Palestinians, and Jordan mainly, the Israelis said that they retreated back this decision. For the Muslims, it's a very important and sacred place. Palestinians, Muslims are allowed to pray there. Other religions can come and only visit, not inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but the complex of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, Palestinians are saying that settlers continue to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex almost on a daily basis, and some of them do not respect the agreements that these are only visits, not for the prayers. They pray there, they perform their silent prayers and their Jewish rituals, which is not allowed. That's why clashes continue to take place between Palestinians and Israelis in that area from time to time.
Hours ago, a rocket attack targeted a neighborhood near the Green Zone in Baghdad, and that's an important area because most government buildings and foreign missions in Iraq, including the U.S. Embassy, are located there. According to security sources, three Katyusha rockets fell in the Al-Mansur district in the early morning hours. No reports of deaths or injuries, no claim of responsibility either. Now, this is the first time since July 29th when a similar attack hit the area. No casualties were reported in that incident either. Only one day after Washington imposed fresh sanctions against Iran, the U.S. and the European signatories to the nuclear deal are now sending yet another confusing signal. They're urging Iran to return to the talks soon to avoid what they call a dangerous escalation. In a joint statement following the G20 summit, the quartet called on Iran to change course. And that's a reference to the country's remedial moves on its nuclear commitments. Tehran stood by its obligation for a whole year and then started cutting back on them in response to the U.S. abandonment of the deal in 2018, and also the failure of the European parties to keep their side of the bargain. Iran is saying it's ready to restart negotiations in late November, but it wants to see the sanctions removed as an outcome of the talks. Washington, though, targeted Tehran's drone program with a new set of sanctions just 2 days ago, a move that Iran says is at odds with the White House claims of wishing to rejoin the agreement. Now, the controversy over how the COVID came into being is still dragging on, with Beijing asking Washington to stop smearing the country and saying that a U.S. intelligence review into the origins of COVID is not only political, but also false. The Chinese foreign minister is calling for a scientific and responsible approach to any such research. The U.S. has just released a more detailed version of its intelligence review into the origins of the pandemic. The report accuses China of not cooperating and hindering a global investigation. It says in the absence of more information, it's hard to conclude whether the virus emerged via animal-to-human transmission or leaked from a laboratory. Foreign Minister Wang, however, believes it's all nothing but political hype. He made those comments on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Rome. Speaking of Rome, new developments coming out of that city. Sources saying that G20 leaders have struck an agreement to cap global warming ahead of the 26th UN Climate Change Conference. Now, three sources close to the summit negotiations say that the G20 states have agreed on limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Now, the summit comes in the lead-up to another major gathering of world leaders in Glasgow, Scotland, for a UN conference on climate change. Delegates from some 200 countries will be attending the COP26 summit for 2 weeks. The event was delayed by a year because of the pandemic. The countries are expected to introduce their plans for cutting emissions by 2030. The UN meteorology body is warning that countries' existing pledges would see the planet's average temperature rise 2.7 degrees Celsius this century. Our correspondent, Syed Purazai, is in Glasgow, and he says that reducing carbon emissions and how to provide funding to fight climate change are the two sticking points in the summit there.
Of note are the two sticking points that really have to be highlighted. One is whether or not any of the dangerous gases that are driving up global temperatures are being reduced at all. According to the United Nations, that is not happening. The measures that have been taken by these countries over the past decade really haven't gone far enough. As a matter of fact, it's been said that at this current rate, if we went forward up to the year 2030, we'd probably be able to cut emissions by a little over 1%. Whereas scientists are saying that in order to keep temperatures under 2 degrees or to hopefully get down to 1.5 degrees, we're going to have to cut emissions by over 7%. And to put that into perspective, remember that COVID, when it shut down the global economy, it emerged that we managed to cut emissions by a little over 6%. So having to do that every single year for the next decade is really a big challenge. So that's one thing that will be definitely discussed here. And another is the question of funding. Back in 2009, world leaders pledged $100 billion a year for poorer countries, low-income countries, to help them really cut their emissions.
Climate change has turned into a driving force behind most natural disasters of our time, from wildfires in the U.S. to floods and storms in Europe and back-to-back droughts in Africa. Scientists are now warning that time is running out, and unless urgent action is taken to slow the climate change, present and future generations will become the victims of this man-made catastrophe.
Climate change is sort of steroids for the weather. That's what experts say. From the northernmost to the southernmost points of the Earth, nowhere and no one is immune to this crisis. In India, people have been devastated by frequent heat waves.
We are affected a lot by this unbearable heat, and us poor are hit the hardest.
And so are Canadians.
It's just unbearable. It's impossible to be out.
This year, July was declared the world's hottest month ever recorded. A recent study shows if the world's emission of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases continues at the same level, in 30 years' time, there will be a climate change apocalypse. That means outdoor life in parts of the Middle East and North Africa would be impossible, regions that are already facing long periods of extreme heat.
We are very tired and cannot stand in the sun. Our situation is very bad. We are exhausted.
Researchers are now warning that even animals and plants are in danger. In a bid to survive, some countries are already looking for new ways to adapt to these intense situations. In Bangladesh, one of the countries worst affected by the extreme weather in recent decades, farmers are developing floating seed beds and salt-resistant rice to avoid unpredictable conditions.
This is the digital age. We saw on YouTube how greenhouse farming works. We tried it on a smaller scale, though. I am doing greenhouse farming this year on 8,000 square feet of land.
Estimates show that $5 trillion a year are needed by 2030 to find measures to fight global warming. But despite signs of progress in a few sectors, the majority of the tasks required for curbing the rising temperatures still seem to be far-fetched. And many are now saying that the upcoming United Nations conference, COP26, is the last major chance to galvanize a collective effort to fight climate change.
Unless there are immediate, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, we will be unable to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and the consequences will be catastrophic. COP26 this November must mark that turning point. By then, we need all countries to commit to achieve net zero emissions by the middle of this century and to present clear, credible, long-term strategies to get there.
All these are reminders that the fatal consequences of this human-induced crisis are threatening our planet now more than ever before.
Now, Russia setting yet another record high in its daily COVID infections as the worst country in Europe. Some 41,000 new infections there just over one day, and that raises the overall caseload to 8.5 million. There have also been nearly 1,200 deaths during the same period. That's the 12th consecutive day that Russia is reporting more than 1,000 fatalities. The tally now nearing 238,000. Officials blame a slow vaccination rollout for the worrying upward trend. The government is enforcing a workplace shutdown the first week of November across the nation. Polls have closed in Japan's general election, with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's ruling coalition projected to maintain power. Still, media projections show the ruling coalition would suffer steep losses. It currently is holding 305 seats in the 465-member lower house of parliament. Japanese media predicts that Kishida's coalition would win 288 seats at the best. Prime Minister Kishida became the Liberal Democratic Party leader a month ago. His predecessor resigned partly due to public discontent over his response to the COVID outbreak in Japan. Kishida has promised to issue a fresh stimulus package to counter the impact of the pandemic on Japanese economy. India's most populous state of Uttar Pradesh is preparing for assembly elections due in early 2020, while anti-Muslim rhetoric is flaring across the nation. Already battled with hate and communal violence, the community is again becoming a political instrument ahead of elections, Munawar Zaman reports.
It is the second largest minority community in the world's largest democracy, accounting for 200 million or more of the population. Apparently, their existence is passing through challenging times in Modi's new India. Muslims in India are marred by the history of communal violence and hatred for decades, but it all swelled since the ruling Hindu nationalist BJP came into power in 2014. In India, the last decade has seen a growing fear and panic among minorities, particularly Muslims. There is a growing mistrust in Modi's Hindu nationalist BJP. Critics accuse the ruling party of polarizing the country on the basis of religion lines, therefore playing a divide and rule policy for another possible vote.
Recent months has seen dramatic violence against the Muslim community. Street vendors, industrialists, businesses, advertisement agencies, and now even Bollywood stars are being targeted in a vicious anti-Muslim rhetoric using social media. Experts say efforts are underway to transform the secular India into a theocratic supremacist Hindu state.
I would say it's much more than that. It is not that they are doing it. They have already vitiated the atmosphere. That's why you have seen public lynching of Muslims, attacking Christians, attacking all minorities, even Dalits.
Hindu extremists are also accused of using social media to spread hatred and hurt the diverse fabric of India. Based on reports by rights groups, the ruling BJP has adopted various laws that legitimize discrimination against religious minorities. This has drawn criticism against the government.
I think you have to go slightly back historically to the formation of RSS, Rashtriya Seva Sangh, and its ideological position on nationalism, which did not tolerate minorities, which were purity of race, etc. That has been the fundamental characteristic of the RSS ideology.
Violence against Muslims and other minorities has prevailed since the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. But the last decade has been far worse after the rise of right-wing Hindu supremacy. Muslims have been suffering repression in India in various forms. The ruling party denies any bias against minorities. Critics call the claim vague. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
And that brings it to the end of this news broadcast.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 31st, 2021. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and even messages from you. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts in IRIB English Radio. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special, the Sunday program is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, and welcome back to your program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians, engineers, and as you may know, these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card in the time of pandemic. As you may know, traditionally, before the coronavirus pandemic, we used to send you paper QSL cards and the materials and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. But at the time of the pandemic, this is not possible. So it's for some months that we have been sending you EQSL cards. So here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Dilip Kumar from India, one of our regular listeners, Ryan Walsh from the US, and Paco Garcia from Spain. So Dilip, Ryan, and Paco, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And here, I send my warmest greetings and gratitudes to those great listeners who have sent us emails and letters from around the world, from every corner of the world, including Alexei Kolako from Russia, Machi Raju Suba from India, Henry L. Omahe from the Philippines, one of our regular listeners, Shivanu Paul, one of our regular listeners from India, and Ryan Walsh from the U.S. Many thanks for sending us these emails and letters from around the world. So, after a short break, I will be back with these kind emails and letters. So, please stay with us. Welcome back. It's a beautiful Sunday of autumn, actually in Northern Hemisphere, and here we are back with your kind emails, and that's a great day. As I said, we have an email from Russia from Alexei Kolakov. Alexei Kolakov from Russia says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, thank you for replying to my email. Would you please tell me if it is possible to send you via email a reception report on broadcast of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran and receive paper QSL card in the mail? However, I know it is difficult in the time of Corona. Thank you. First of all, warm greetings to you, Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Many thanks for sending us this email. As I said in the introduction part of the program, sending paper QSL cards and the promotional items of IRIB English Radio to our great and dear listeners around the world is not possible, and that's because of the coronavirus pandemic. So we have to wait and see when the coronavirus is controlled around the world, and then of course we will send our dear listeners the promotional items of IRIB English Radio. Thank you for writing to us, Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Write to us soon, of course, and tell us your views about our programs. And as I said, from India, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Shivandapol. Yes, Shivandapol from India says, "Dear English Service, IRIB English Radio staff, greetings from India. I am Shivandapol, living in West Bengal, India, and I am a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. A few days ago, I had the pleasure to listen to your radio. The signal strength was moderate, with a slight noise, but overall reception was moderate. I send recording files of the program as an attachment. I hope my reception report would be helpful to your technicians." Salam and warm greetings to you, Shivandapol from India, and please accept our appreciations to you. for sending us this email to your radio, IRIB English Radio. So, you live in West Bengal, India, and that's great. Thank you for sharing your, as you know, your whereabouts to listeners of Listeners Special. And of course, you are a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. So you said a few days ago, you listened to IRIB English Radio and the signal strength was moderate and with slight noise. We will refer to our engineers and technicians about what you explained. And of course, the reception report you sent to us was, of course, very helpful and very useful to our technicians and engineers. Thank you for sharing your experience to us and to our technicians and engineers. Shivantapul from India, many thanks for writing this email to us. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Of course, tell us your views about our programs. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Philippines from Henry L. Omathe, one of our regular listeners. Please stay with us. Welcome back. As I said, from the Philippines, we have an email from Henry L. Omathe, one of our regular listeners. Henry says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, greetings from Bacolod City here in Central Philippines. I am one of your listeners from this part of the world. Can you please send me your new shortwave frequency schedule so that I can find and listen to your station easier? Kind regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Henry Alomate from Philippines, and thank you for sending us this email. So you live in Bacolod City in Central Philippines, and that's great. Yes, you are one of our regular listeners from this part of the world, from the Philippines. As for your request about sending shortwave frequency schedule, as you may know, it's not possible because of the coronavirus pandemic around the world, but instead you can find the shortwave frequency schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you for writing this email to us, Henry. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And again, from India, we have an email from Machi Raju Subha from India. Machi Raju Subha from India says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, greetings. I listened to your listeners' special program a few days ago through parstoday.com internet stream. I have to say that it was quite joyful to listen to the comments and music in the program. As you know, in India, the COVID situation is severe. At the time I'm writing this email to you, the lockdown is continuing in several states across India. I request you an EQSL to my report. Thank you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Machi Raju Subha from India. And many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. So you listened to listeners' special program a few days ago through our website, actually through internet stream. As you may know, our dear listeners around the world can find the archive of our programs in our website, parstoday.com/en. Yes, you can find the frequency schedule and the archive of our program and the news. And that's great that you were able to find this program, Listeners Special, there in our website, and that's great. So you found actually the comments and music in the program joyful, and it's great. It's so inspiring and encouraging to hear that from our dear listeners. And you explained the COVID situation in your country, India, and we're so sorry for that. And we hope that all the people in your country, India, be inoculated in the time of the pandemic. And of course, we are praying for all the people and all the countries around the world to get rid of this disease. So, as you said at the time you're writing this email to us, the lockdown is continuing in several states across your country, India. And as I said, we are so sorry for that. And we pray for the health of the people in your country and, of course, around the world. And as for your request about sending you EQSL, of course, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL. Thank you. Thank you very much, Machu Raju Subha from India, for writing this email to IRIB English Radio and sharing the news about the coronavirus pandemic in your country. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with the last email, of course, in this program. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. From Ryan Walsh from the U.S., we have an email here. He says, "Dear staff of IRIB English Radio, my name is Ryan Walsh. I am writing a reception report for what I believe was a broadcast from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I can't give you the details, and maybe you can clarify if I'm correct about my reception. Thank you so much. I have included an audio file with this email, which may help verify reception. If this was correctly identified broadcast, and if you send QSL cards, I would greatly appreciate one. Thank you for your time. Electronic QSLs can be sent to this email as well. Keep broadcasting. You have avid listeners." Salam and warm greetings to you, Ryan Walsh from the US, and many thanks for sending us this email. Thank you for sending us reception report, because as I have said several times during this program, that sending actually these reception reports are very useful and helpful for IRIB English Radio. And anyway, thank you for sending us this email and the reception report. Of course, we have received the audio file you attached to this email, and my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL or EQSL to you. So yes, we keep broadcasting, so you keep being our great listener. Ryan Walsh from the US, many thanks for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Ryan Walsh. Dear listeners, time tells me that we have to skip to the next section of this week's listeners special, which is of course this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen. We hope you'll enjoy it.
Hello there, hello everybody in Iran. I hope everybody's okay out there. My name is Adam Santa. I'm from Leicester in England. I am a frequent listener of IRIB. I've been tuning in on the shortwaves for about a year now and again, whenever I get time. I enjoy the show, I enjoy the content. It's a very interesting show. I enjoy hearing about the listeners from around the world. And I hope that everybody is doing well. I think the content is pretty good. I particularly like the interview segments. It's quite interesting when you get people from different parts of the world there. It's quite interesting to hear their perspective on things, simply because we don't really get that in any other format, really. It's one of the things I enjoy about shortwave radio, is that you can guarantee that sooner or later you're going to pick up a station that has some kind of different perspective on things. So it's quite interesting to do that. I would just like to say, around the world, I hope you're doing well. Continue listening to IRIB because they're doing a great job. Keep in contact with them. Keep the shortwaves active. I know that the shortwaves aren't exactly as busy as they used to be, so we need to keep that going. And I hope everybody is doing well.
Wishing you all the best in life, especially health in the time of pandemic and safety, of course. We wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Questions about former U.S. President Donald Trump's role in January 6th events may go unanswered unless House investigators can secure a breakthrough to obtain documents and testimony. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Hugo Lowell under the heading Capitol Attack Panel Faces Pivotal Moment as Trump Allies Stonewall. Please stay with us to hear more about Hugo Lowell's article. The U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee investigating the Capitol attack is confronting a pivotal moment as resistance from top Trump administration aides threatens to undermine their efforts to uncover the extent of the former president's involvement in the January 6th insurrection. The Select Committee remains in the evidence-gathering phase of the investigation that now encompasses at least five different lines of inquiry, from whether Donald Trump abused the presidency to reinstall himself in office or coordinated with far-right rally organizers. But two sources said unless House investigators can secure a breakthrough to obtain documents and testimony from Trump's White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, and others in the next few weeks, the most pressing questions about Trump's role in January 6th may go unanswered. The sources said the Select Committee has designated its so-called Gold Team to examine the extent of Trump's personal involvement in the events that left five dead and more than 140 injured as his supporters stormed the Capitol in his name. The sources said one major focus of the investigation is whether Trump had advanced knowledge of the insurrection, since if they uncover evidence of conspiracy to violently stop the certification of Joe Biden's election win, that could constitute a crime. But the sources said to make that kind of case, which would then guide Congress on how to draft laws to avert a repeat of the Capitol attack, may be impossible without clear insight into Trump's movements inside the White House, both on January 6th and the days before. The sources said the Select Committee effectively needs to know what Trump's top aides know about what the former president thought would allow him to remain in office, and whether that extended to encouraging surrogates to physically stop the certification. To that end, House investigators recently subpoenaed Meadows, his deputy Dan Scavino, former chief strategist Steve Bannon, and Defense Department aide Cash Patel, while asking the National Archives to turn over Trump White House records. Meadows is of special interest since he remained by Trump's side as the Capitol attack unfolded and in the final weeks of the administration sat in on January 6th strategy meetings with the former president. The former chief strategist Bannon was similarly subpoenaed for documents and testimony as he was in constant contact with Trump in the days before the Capitol attack and played a major role in drawing up the legal arguments for Pence to return Trump to office. Bannon also appeared to have prior knowledge of the Capitol attack, which former White House aides say would not have escaped Trump's attention, Bannon said on his War Room podcast the day before the insurrection all hell is going to break loose tomorrow. Meanwhile, the Select Committee also asked the National Archives for Trump White House materials, since they are the custodian for visitor logs and Oval Office memoranda, records that could shed light on the interactions Trump was having with Meadows and Bannon. But under orders from Trump to defy the subpoenas on grounds of the executive privilege, the Select Committee is yet to obtain any materials or testimony from other aides, while the National Archives is unable to release records until Trump's lawsuit on the issue is resolved. The collective efforts from Trump and his aides mean that, unless House investigators can find a way to circumvent the logjam, the Gold Team may ultimately find themselves unable to ever uncover whether January 6 was a White House-sponsored insurrection. For instance, former chief strategist Steve Bannon was recently referred to the Justice Department for prosecution after he defied his subpoena in its entirety, but a source at the U.S. Attorney's Office cautioned the decision on his case could take months of deliberations. The source said the delay stems in part from the fact that the Justice Department is now examining whether they can successfully secure an indictment in the Bannon case and are indifferent to the Select Committee's need to finish a report before the 2022 midterms. The source added the U.S. Attorney's Office may not be able to proceed with a potential prosecution against Bannon until the Justice Department first resolves other constitutional complaints raised by Trump in his lawsuit against the National Archives. Taken together, staff on the Gold's team are now starting to think the most likely avenue for securing Trump White House materials is not through the former president's aides, but through the National Archives request, since Biden has the final say over executive privilege. Still, given Trump's pending lawsuit lodged against the National Archives, a move described by a source close to the Trump legal effort as a way to stymie the investigation, the Select Committee may run out of time before being able to examine the materials. Tim Mulvey, spokesperson for the Select Committee on Friday, October 29th, rejected the internal concerns, saying in a statement, "While we don't comment on the specifics of our investigation, we are moving ahead expeditiously to uncover the facts, get answers for the American people, and make legislative recommendations to help ensure nothing like January 6 ever happens again." Mulvey added, "The Select Committee won't be derailed by those seeking to obstruct our investigation, and we won't be distracted by anonymous sources posing as experts and insiders." The Select Committee's struggle to enforce orders against the Trump aides shows the lack of teeth carried by congressional subpoenas, with its power systematically eroded by a Trump administration that has found since 2016 that defiance carries scant penalties. But the difficulty in obtaining any formal Trump White House materials, either through the former president's aides or even through the National Archives, also underscores how what would be the most consequential lines of inquiry appear to be dangling by a thread. The Select Committee has had success eliciting information elsewhere, most notably with individuals connected to the Trump-supporting Women for America First organization that planned the January 6 Stop the Steal rally subpoenaed earlier in October. House investigators also heard voluminous testimony from Trump's former acting attorney general, Jeffrey Rosen, over 7 hours of voluntary testimony that could help the Gold Team establish whether the former president unlawfully pressured the Justice Department. But the sources said, without knowing what Trump's top aides know of the former president's connections to the Capitol attack, it could mean that Congress is left unable to write legislation to avert a different effort to stop the certification in 2024.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the important branches of Islam is zakat, and zakat also being the offshoot by which the concept of charity comes from. So the concept of sadaqah, the concept of giving, of being generous. And now also, as we saw in one of our previous episodes, that giving physical or monetary or you know, anything that is, you know, can be felt, for example, is not the only form of charity that can be given. There are other forms of charity also that exist. For example, in that tradition, we saw that the best of charity was the reconciliation between, you know, the society or individuals within the society that are at loggerheads with one another or have differences of opinion. This is what we mean by charity. So charity has a very broad and a very vast meaning, what is known as charity or sadaqah. Right? So in this tradition, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentions that on the day of judgment, there will be a particular station or a particular reward for anybody who gave charity, regardless of what will happen afterwards. Whoever gave charity, in all of its broad meanings, there will be a particular respite for that person on the day of judgment. So the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam is reported to have said that everyone, this is key, everyone, there is no condition on this. Obviously, there's a discussion, we can find other traditions and so on and so forth to kind of confine this tradition, restrict this tradition and so on and so forth. But right now, as we read the tradition, it says everyone. Again, non-Muslim, not non-Muslim, it says everyone. Everyone will only have recourse, so they will have the ability to go and be under the shade provided by charity. So on the day of judgment, there will be a particular place where a person can seek refuge in that shade on the day of judgment. Why? Because of the charity that they gave. Everyone. That recourse and that refuge that a person can seek from that shade provided by charity will be given to everybody who has given it until that person is called for their affairs to be judged by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So by taking the second part of the tradition into consideration, we can understand that the everyone in the first part could mean anybody, could be a Muslim, a non-Muslim, a person who didn't even believe in God. Na'udhu billahi. But the end of the thing shows that, yes, there will be a judgment regardless. Yes, you give charity. But what are your intentions? Who did you give it to? And so on and so forth. There will still be judgment on that person. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's mercy is so much that He loves charity so much that everybody will be able to have refuge and recourse to a particular place on the day of judgment. Allah will be specific mercy for those individuals who gave charity in this world. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make us of those who continuously give charity and of those who not only have refuge under that shade, but we seek refuge all the way until we enter into the eternal gardens of paradise. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am. Pleading at your door, send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no
us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo, says the